Welcome, everyone, to the Township's Daily News Bits. I'm Holly Bailey, who has the pleasure of bringing you news and events that matter to townshippers. This is through the Local Journalism Initiative, funded by the Government of Canada. Earlier this fall, the Knowlton Literary Festival celebrated its 15th anniversary, with many events, readings, and presentations taking place. The Saturday event, over at the Centre-Lac-Brome, saw world-renowned authors congregating to share their pieces of work, their discoveries, and just to have candid conversations with the audience members. To kick off the event was Dr. Diana Beresford Kroger, a world-renowned scientist in the realms of botany, biology, and biochemistry. She's an author and a poet who has many books under her belt and recently published her latest, entitled Our Green Heart, The Soul and Science of Forests. To say it was a privilege and a pleasure would be an understatement. Here on 99.1, our special feature with Diana Beresford Kroger. It will be presented as a two-part mini-series with a second portion of this conversation airing tomorrow. Please do sit back, perhaps make yourself a cup of tea, and enjoy.
Oh my.
Oh my, my, my.
Dr. Diana Beresford Kroger, thank you so much on behalf of our community for speaking with me today.
Oh, you are very welcome. You have a very posh community, I must say. It has got gorgeous trees and lakes and people and everything. If I talk about this, everybody is going to come to your doorstep.
Well,
me listen. Following the whole lot.
Thank you for coming to ours.
You're welcome. I've never been here before, and it's just a gorgeous place.
Thank you. It does feel like a blessing to be able to call this home, this area home, and it be here in Canada. Yeah. We're celebrating your book, Our Green Heart, The Soul and Science of Forests. And I feel so much meaning is captured in the title of this book. I wager that for many, the idea of our forests having a soul would be somewhat of a foreign concept. Could you expand on the significance of the title?
The significance of the title is, first off, that the publisher didn't want to use the word soul in a title.
Interesting.
They wanted to curtail the concept of spirituality out of my work. And I said, no, that's staying in. It's staying in or I'm going out. After they obviously had discussed it between them, and they decided, yes, it could stay. But I think we're getting to the point in society where we're forgetting the soul and we're forgetting all religions, and all you have to do is look at the different churches all around the world, especially here in the Western world, in North America. They're all closing. And I'm talking about all the churches. I'm not pinpointing any particular religion. Religion is good for people. It gives you a kind of you can vent your steam in religion and find out where somebody is right or somebody is wrong, or there's a discussion. There's also a community aspect to it. And the churches and the people who built these churches made this country, and we should respect them, if not respect God itself. You know, I have a goddaughter who is in Switzerland. No, she's in Sweden. And she's doing an app on telling people how to be compassionate. Now, if you do go to church, if you listen to any sermons of any kind, I don't care, any kind, it behooves us to be compassionate to all things and all people. And we shouldn't have to have an app for it. Go and bang up a machine and say, well, tell me how to think. I don't think so. Let's look at one another and find love in one another between us and do unto others as they want you them to do to you. Like, come on, this is not good. It's not good for anybody, actually, especially the children.
It's basic, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
I used to be a teacher, and for me it was about teaching kindness and respect.
That's right.
And that's everything and everyone. whether it's your environment, your neighbor, your own self.
Yeah, yeah. And if you don't respect people who don't, they find themselves in prison. Oh, what a surprise. But it's something that's fundamental in society, in a civil society, which I think we have. But I don't like to see the spiritual life going out of the world. We are really, in the Irish way of thinking, the Brehon way of thinking, body, mind and soul. We look after the body too much. We all get too fat too much. Mind, your mind gets boggled by television and the internet and all of the netty net nets that all of these multi-billionaires are squeaking out billions of dollars on our backs and turning us into slaves for them, in my opinion. And so I think we're on a pathway to what Shakespeare said, the primrose path to the everlasting bonfire.
Our own demise.
Our own demise. I think we are looking at our own demise. And the children know it. The children seem to have some understanding that there's a problem in society.
Right.
And all the kids that I've talked to, and I've talked to a lot of kids, I did a big Imagination Foundation talk with all of the kids of Fort Worth in Texas. All the parents, and I'm talking about all the kids, including the private schools. And they came into this huge, huge stadium. They were bussed in one bus by another bus and another bus. And the people of Fort Worth wanted me to tell the kids there about climate change and how to stop it. And the kids had this ghost in their head that there was something very, very ugly on the horizon for them. And
instinct.
I don't think we have the right to do that. I don't think we have the right to frighten our children before they're even adults.
Right.
You know? So, anyway. That's the stand of one Irish woman, God help us. Yes.
You had such a, if I may say, a privileged childhood in the sense that knowledge was your inheritance.
Yes.
And I was looking a little bit of the ancient Celtic alphabet, Ogham, that is a tree alphabet.
Yeah, it's an alphabet based on trees.
Yes, that mix of mythology and spirituality was right innately there at the core.
Yeah. You see, what the Aboriginal people talk, the First Nations talk, that the land is the best teacher. Well, now, translate that. You see, they do know what they're talking about. You walk out in the springtime into a forest, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a packet of seeds in your pocket, let's pretend. And so you come across an oak tree, and you look at the apex, the top of the branch of any of the branches of an oak tree, let's say at the beginning of April, 1st of April, April Fool, your April Fool going out with your packet of beans or your packet of whatever, squash in your pocket. And if you see that tip of the branch elongating a tiny, tiny bit, showing a tiny bit of green and then white as it's elongating. What the tree is telling you is there's enough BTU, British units of heat, in the air to make everything grow. And that's the teacher tree for the First Nations. Then they grow and plant their corn. And their corn is always guaranteed not to be hurt by frost by doing that.
Wow.
There's the teacher.
It's all right there in front of us.
Yeah, and we never see it.
Why do you think that is?
Because we didn't respect, as pioneers coming into this country, we didn't respect the First Nations. They weren't respected. They were mangled and broken and bashed. And now they're trying to pull themselves together. And they've lost a lot of their wisdoms. I have addressed the Assembly of First Nations, and a lot of the First Nations have a great deal of time for me, but I have a great deal of time for them too. And I think they're pulling their knowledge patterns together, because they do have fire, the fire feeders. They do have. I'm called a medicine woman by them. So they have come to me and look for answers for some of the species. Do you realize that by all the spraying of all the tree, of all of the fields, and actually as I've come into this area, and this area is you know, Lac Brum.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much pesticides put on the fields. There isn't one green speck on the fields today as I'm speaking. I drove in yesterday, my husband Christian and I drove in. We were looking for a speck of green, some green growth. Now, what that's done for the First Nations is we've destroyed all of their ability to pick any of their medicines from any of those fields. We've robbed them of their medicines also.
And ourselves in the wake of that.
Well, we're too stupid to even recognize that.
Oh.
But they know that their treasure is in the, are all the wastelands, or all of what we'd call wastelands, they wouldn't call it wastelands, like all the mulleins and so on and so forth. They have antibiotics in them. And the First Nations know that. But so they come to me. If there's a big problem with the Cree Nation or something, they come to me for some medicines. And I have them because I don't use pesticides. I have sterile techniques in my farm. You come in, you're not to bring soil with you. Never.
Mm.
You come in, everything is sterile because I don't want disease transfer. But I also have all of the ribes and all of the old species there in a medicine walk.
In your arboretum.
And the arboretum,
in
and
Ontario.
I also have a medicine walk as well as the arboretum.
Oh.
The North American medicine walk.
Can you tell us about
They're
that?
All, the idea was, I saw how much was being destroyed. This would be about 30 years ago, 30, 40 years ago. Like the spraying was increased. And I knew from in Ireland, it was detrimental. In Ireland, because it's wet, you have to increase the spraying level on the ground, because to make an effect of killing everything. But the killers, this are the sprays, they're designed killing compounds. They affect us too. So I saw this was again happening here in North America also. And then I thought, well, all the weeds are going to be dead, or they're going to be changed. So all the different things, the ribes, which are currants, all the different kinds of currants, are a North American species, actually. The crandleberries are North American. There are all kinds of species that are very interesting. And so I set up a big, long walkway, and it's a North American walk. And all you have to do for that walk is smell the fragrances. That's all. That's all. Walk slowly down this area, and you get all kinds of fragrances that tamp down your heart a little bit, improve your circulation, improve your breathing, improve your intelligence. You know, 20% increase in IQ. So I have that.
Hmm. When people are dealing with depression or disease or just not well in their in their own self, spending time in nature is so reinvigorating.
It is. And it is because the biodiversity is in nature. The biodiversity is standing tall still. But it is being destroyed right now. And why can't a farmer leave a borderland all around his fields? What's happened is the pollinators, all of the insects are, I think 72% of them are dying or dead. And they're all the pollinators. They're all the insects. They're mostly beneficial insects. They're not mostly problem insects. They're beneficial insects. And if they left borders on their fields like they're told to do in England, then there is food for the insects, because the insects are flying and they need sugar and they need all kinds of food to build their little nests and their little hives. You know, the wasps and all of those creatures. They've got to have food. There's no food there. And if you don't believe me, get into your car, drive your car down in the middle of summer, down a couple of miles down your road, and you'll find no insects get splotted on your windshield. You never have to clean your windshield now. It used to be 30 years ago, you'd have to, after a summer afternoon, you have to take out the scraper and swear like hell to get all the
stick right on there.
They stick right there because their blood is on there, so that's a protein, and it sticks, and you have to rub the blazes out of it to get it off. But they're the insects that make our food, that pollinate our food.
I think of the animals and nature and wonder, they must look at us and think like, gosh, you're a rash. Like, don't you get it?
Yeah.
Don't you get it?
Yeah.
Before it's too late. Like, Hi.
Yeah, that's a famous SOS message into space saying, you know, two-legged creature, big problem. four-legged creature, okay. Two-legged creature, get rid of it.
You're tuned in to 99.1, and that is Dr. Diana Beresford Kroger. What an exquisite mind and a beautifully soulful and refreshing character. We continue now with our conversation as she speaks to us about AI, the hidden costs, and what she dreams of as a legacy for Canada.
I do think the planet per se, we run into our solar system and we ring the bell of life in the solar system. There is a frequency to the planet ourselves, just like a doorbell. We have a frequency. And I think that that frequency implies unity. And if you have unity, there's also a knowledge of self. If there's a knowledge of self, there's an understanding within our system, our world. We have buffer zones that help a problem here and there, but those buffer zones are disappearing.
Would you say, like, biodiversity is the insurance plan of nature?
That's a perfect comment.
Mm.
That's a perfect, perfect comment. If you find a dock leaf, if you get stung by an ant, you can go to a dock leaf and rub a dock leaf on, or a bee, the dock leaf on. That's one thing. And maybe if you can't find dock leaves, then you can go and chew a little bit of aspen leaf and put the aspen on the bite. There's biodiversity right there. You know, you can't have that, you can have this, you can't do that, you can't do this.
Wow.
But we're taking you can't out of the equation. So now, for instance, all our foods, all the foods everybody's eating is based on 8 major foods. Mm-hmm. You know, like maize and potatoes and cassava and stuff. There's only 8 of them. Tomato is another one. There's only 8 of them. All we have to do is start destroying 2 or 3 or 4 of them, and we will not be able to feed the planet. So it's the greed of using, you know, striking out on the fields and saying, I don't care what happens down the road 20, 30 years' time. Well, I'm afraid you do have to think that way.
You do. You breathe. You like to eat. You like to be able to live above ground.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And we have to pay for it. If a farmer is working really hard, or people working in the forests, or if they're working there, they have to get paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to pay for our food. And, you know, there's no cheapskate way out of it. Or grow your own food is the other alternative. Bend your back and do a bit of work for your own garden and you'll see how tough it is. And we don't respect them. Again, you're back to respect. We don't respect the farmers for what they're doing. And we should do that. And now, of course, it's the farming empire, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, buying up all the land in Canada and other places. And all of these wealthy, super wealthy people are doing that. So it's, for the common man, let's call it the common man, it's become a tougher world. And, you know, they tell you, you know, your internet is going to be good and this is going to be good. I can't see people being more relaxed. I can't see people having more time. You know, I live a simple life. I live very simply. For me, a book is three pencils. When I'm writing a book, I write it in pencil. I go down to the National Gallery, I choose colour, I like nice colour on pencils, and I tell the clerk behind the desk, I said, this is going to write a book. And she laughs at me because she thinks that I'm crazy, that nobody could ever write a book with a pencil. Once upon a time, they were written by a pencil, but now they're not. But I am. And so she laughs, and then I go out, and I'm delighted because she thinks I'm crazy, which is marvellous. And I go home and I write the book. And then she has to sell the book. So it's the perspective. And I do try to live simply. And how that started off is I was invited to meet the Dalai Lama when he came to Ottawa. Quite a few years ago now, when he was well. And he was on the screen and he was speaking, And he was going on saying one way to stop climate change, one way, this is his way, which is a very good way, is to, you know, to be simple, live a simple life. We don't need 5 cars, we can only drive 1 at a time. Don't need 5 meals, you get as fat as be damned if you do. So, you know, if you overdrink, you know, you'll probably crash your car and kill somebody and all that stuff. So I thought, he's talking like I'm living. So I went home to my husband, Chris, and I said, Chris, could I write a book about simple living? And I said, I think it's very necessary, you know, to the sweetness of a simple life then came into being. And that book goes all around the farming community. There are people who consider that to be their Bible. But it's just all the stuff that I do, you know, all the things that I, to make life easy. And when people come into my house, as a matter of fact, I like to have tea for them or a cake or something to make them feel comfortable so we can have a good laugh.
It's That's just beautiful.
Very simple.
It's connecting.
Yeah.
Person to person, heart to heart.
Yeah. And if you like somebody and you're around them, your cortisol levels go down.
Mm.
That means the stress on the kidneys go down. That means the stress in your family goes down. And you just open somebody with open arms. Bring them in, the good, the bad, the indifferent, bring them in, look after them, and then they go out happy, and then you're happy.
Right, and it carries on. It's
yeah,
like
it does.
A wave.
It's like a big wave, popping out, and popping out.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's so simple.
It's very that simple.
It's so simple. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And accessible. It's right there.
Yeah. And I got a copy of the Sweetness of a Simple Life. Somebody there a couple of years ago asked me to, would I sign it? I said, of course. But it was filthy dirty. Right? And I said, no, come here. This book is filthy dirty. And they said, well, do you know what's happened to it? And I said, no, I don't know. All the farmers had passed the book from one, you know, postal box to another. So I
Brilliant.
Said, oh, you're excused. It's okay.
Brilliant.
That's all right. You've got a bit of cow dirt on it, that's fine.
That's the real deal.
That's the real deal.
That's the goal. Yes. I actually have it on my nightstand, and I read a few pages before bed. And it just warmed my heart when I read about your boudoir.
It's my boudoir.
Can you tell us about that?
My boudoir, yes. Well, I have a boudoir, and my boudoir...
It's acceptable.
It's not the boudoir you're thinking about, no, either. It's a boudoir where I have onions and I have bags of onions and all my potatoes that I've been breeding. I'm interested in breeding potatoes. And I have bred some really good potatoes too. And all my leeks are in buckets and sand. So and all of my canning my tomatoes and everything. So we eat out of the garden. And the root cellar is my boudoir. And I go in there and I feel very happy looking around, satisfied that maybe I'll be eating for the next year and nobody
Beautiful.
Can stop it. That's my boudoir. And it's not everybody I bring into the boudoir, because there are some people who are very lazy and they won't do anything. They won't lift a shovel or anything. So they won't appreciate my good work. But the ones who can sweat it out, I'll bring them in and I'll explain everything I'm doing to them.
Well,
so they're treated like queens in my boudoir.
And just the pleasure you must have in eating, like reaping what you sow.
Oh, the taste is different.
Oh,
see,
right.
The taste is different. And I was aware of that in Lachines when I was a child. If you go to the ground, just to the garden, and it's a clean garden, never seen pesticides, never seen anything like that, you go out and pull a carrot and you eat that carrot. You shake the dirt off it and eat a carrot or a piece of cabbage or something. That's where taste comes in, because our taste buds have been fouled by all kinds of, you know, synthetic compounds and so on and so forth. And that's not good for you. Your hearing is going a bit and your taste buds are going a bit. You're wearing the perfection of the human body down a little bit too much. And I don't think we should be eating all of this, you know, industrial food. So, you know, the odd bit when you kind of go a bit crazy and you think, oh, you know, I want to have this and that, that's fine. But not on a daily basis, absolutely not.
No, it's kind of like you got to keep the soul in it.
You got to keep the soul there.
That was author and scientist Dr. Diana Beresford Croker speaking to us about her latest novel, Our Green Heart. The Soul and Science of Forests. This is a two-part mini-series, and we will complete the conversation tomorrow. So I invite you to join us at the same time and the same place here on 99.1 for our chat with Diana Beresford Kroger. Thank you so much to the Local Journalism Initiative, funded by the Government of Canada, who made this possible. And with that, I'm Holly Bailey. We'll catch you tomorrow.